Kia ora. Welcome to Aaron's Podcast, episode 219. Today is Wednesday, June 9, 2010. Today was a bright, sunny day with nice blue skies, some white puffy clouds, and winter is definitely here. Now, I do remember getting a bit of stick a few months ago when I said that summer began on December 1st, and people were like, oh, no, it doesn't begin until the solstice, which is around the 21st. And I got that also from people in New Zealand, not just people from overseas. Well, now things are a bit different here. All of the Kiwis that I know are saying that winter started on June 1st because it's cold and we're having snow, especially in the South Island, in the Central Plateau, the North Island, which is around Lake Taupo, which is in, kind of in the middle of the North Island. But I think that I was right all along, personally. And yes, winter did begin on June 1st, when there was a pretty noticeable change in the weather when it became colder. But yes, we are definitely in winter, no matter how you slice it, and no matter what the calendar says. So there, that's my final word on the subject. Until my next one. I'm a bit punchy, because I'm still tired from last week. I think it's actually just now caught up with me. It's probably going to take me a few days to get caught up from the lack of sleep last week. I think over the whole week, I probably only averaged maybe 5 hours a night, if that. Probably less. And I do need a bit more than that to function properly. But I got there in the end, got all my work done, and just have one last thing to sort out on the Pride 48 schedule, and then that's all done. But at this point, it looks like we have retained all of the people who were originally planning on participating at the scheduling stage. A couple had dropped out beforehand, before we got to the scheduling. But we didn't lose anybody through the scheduling so far, and we actually picked up a podcaster. So that's all pretty good. But I thought I would start today with a bit of a sort of a recap, a weekend recap, if you will. And we didn't do all that much. We had our normal takeaways on Friday night. Saturday, we didn't do all that much. Sunday, well, we did do one thing, but then we also had Nigel's sister and our niece around for dinner on Sunday night. And Monday, we didn't do much of anything either. And it was lovely. It was nice to just have a few days to just kind of relax and chill out. But Sunday, of course, which was Saturday in the U.S., we did something unusual, and that is that Nigel actually guest-hosted for Daniel Brewer. I keep wanting to call him Daniel Beaver. Daniel Brewer on his Walkahol Live show on QNation.fm. That was from 10 p.m. to midnight Eastern time in the U.S., which was, what was that, 2 to 4 p.m. our time, I think, or something. I don't know. I have to look it up, and I'm too tired to remember. But it was a lot of fun. Nigel was the host. He did all of the technical stuff, and I was just the pretty talent, the pretty assistant. But seriously, I just we just talked a little bit. He played some of his favorite tunes and played a couple of requests. We had some folks playing along on Twitter, and especially in the Pride 48 chat room, because that was the only thing I knew how to access. And it was good fun. Now, I don't know if we'll ever do anything like that again. Nigel is, however, working to fix some of the technical glitches that he experienced on the night, so that if we do it again, things will be much better and much smoother. And like I said to him, there's nothing like working out your technical issues on somebody else's show. But anyway, we had a lot of fun. And I'm glad that at least some of my listeners were able to join us as well. But that was basically our weekend. It was very light, very easygoing, very simple, and it was nice. It was very, very nice indeed. Now, I have some items in the news that I wanted to talk about today. First is a story which has sort of gone international, and it's about Riff Raff, or actually Richard O'Brien, who played Riff Raff in the Rocky Horror Picture Show. He is a British national. He was born in Britain. But he lived in New Zealand for quite a few years, about roughly 10 years or so, from, I think it was the age of 10 until his 20s or something like that, from his teens to his early 20s. He headed back to Britain. And he spent a great deal of his time in Hamilton, which is the major city in the Waikato, about an hour and 15, hour and a half south of Auckland. And so much so that the city there placed a statue of him as Riff Raff on the spot where the barbershop where he used to work once stood. And you can still go there. You can still go see the statue. It's in an odd place because of that. See, you know, these sort of shop fronts, and then all of a sudden, oop, there's a statue of Riff Raff. It's kind of kind of odd. But he has often talked about the influence of New Zealand, and apparently some of the songs have references to New Zealand in them, he has said. And even the character name is supposed to have come from his time in New Zealand, and he's talked a lot about it. Well, the International News reported that he wanted to retire to New Zealand. His, I believe it's a brother and sister live in New Zealand, and his son is applying for residency in New Zealand. So he wants to move back here to retire. He owns some property near Tauranga. And the story goes that he was refused a residency permit. Well, it's not as simple as that. It turns out that he was dealing with an immigration consultant who told him that he would not qualify for permanent residency or citizenship because of his age, and mostly because of his age. He's 68. And generally speaking, you can't get permanent residence if you're over 55. There are, of course, exceptions, but they were suggesting that New Zealand was not, not appreciative of what he had done as in helping to promote New Zealand. And he's basically saying, you know, here they put this statue of me up, but they refuse to recognize my contributions or something like that. Well, it is a little bit more complicated than it first seemed, because it turns out that it was an immigration advisor who told him that he wouldn't qualify, and not the government himself. The prime minister himself said yesterday, I think it was yesterday, that Immigration New Zealand had not received any application from O'Brien, from Riff Raff. And if you wanted to live in New Zealand, he kind of needed to apply. So apparently they're going to the Associate Immigration Minister, Kate Wilkinson, to get some sort of special dispensation. And she's saying basically, well, you know, he's got to apply and go through the process and blah-de-blah-de-blah. And my gut feeling is that if that actually happens, that he will definitely be granted residence. Because, I mean, he has historic ties to New Zealand. He has family ties to New Zealand. And he really has helped to promote New Zealand when he's had the opportunity. And, I mean, who would want to be known as the country that turned away riffraff? I mean, really? But I thought I would mention it because it was in the international news. It's picked up by AFP. And I don't know how to pronounce it, Agence France-Presse or something, I don't know, anyway. And so it may have made it into a newspaper or other media report where you live, and I thought I would sort of set the record straight on what that was all about. But that's, it's an interesting developing story, I think. But there's some local news that's also kind of bizarre. There is a bank that's based here in Auckland called the ASB. And it used to stand for Auckland Savings Bank, but it has since just changed its name to ASB Bank, which, if you stop to think about it, is Auckland Savings Bank. But ASB doesn't mean that anymore. It's just ASB. Well, it's actually owned by Commonwealth Bank of Australia, which is one of the, what do they call them, five sisters, I think, the five main banks in Australia. And foreign banks can't enter because those five banks are protected by the Australian government. And, oh, it's really complicated. But those Australian banks own all but one of our New Zealand banks, major banks. The only exception is Kiwi Bank, which is owned by the people of New Zealand. And there's been talk that the national-led government wants to sell it off. And that created a huge uproar when that story was breaking, partly because the government sounded disjointed on it, about one hand saying, no, we will never sell it, others saying, well, we might consider selling it in our second term. Well, the Prime Minister has now said, no way, no how, we're not selling it, that's that. And I certainly hope that he's right, because it is the only alternative to the Australian-owned banks in New Zealand. But one of those Australian-owned banks is the ASB. And they had one of their bankers, one of their investment advisors, I guess he was, and he stole $17.8 million while working at ASB over 9 years. Now, you have to wonder how it is that somebody could steal $17.8 million with nobody noticing, and that it took them 9 years to catch him. The only reason they caught him was because a customer had concerns about their account and called the bank. And everything unraveled from that one call. Did nobody notice that their balances weren't right in 9 years? I mean, anyway. One of the things that makes this story unusual isn't just embezzlement. That happens in every country. But that he paid $2.55 million to a prostitute. And now, she worked for a particular brothel here in Auckland where the going rate is $210 for an hour or something like $1,500 for a night, according to the New Zealand Herald. I certainly would have no way of knowing that because they only have heterosexuals. Be that as it may. And the ASB Bank is suing to try to get the money back from the prostitute. Now, it's an interesting thing because some of the first reactions of people, nobody likes the big banks. Nobody likes the Australian-owned banks in particular. When you talk about customer satisfaction rankings, it's all relative. It's relative to each other. If you were to put them against an absolute measure of whether people like them or not, I'm sure none of them would get into the positive territories. However, so that's part of people's reaction is an anti-bank thing. But part of the reaction is that they're saying that ASB is only going after her because they find her profession unsavory because she's a prostitute. Even though, of course, that's a perfectly legal profession for a New Zealand citizen or permanent resident aged 18 or over to engage in. Nevertheless, that they're alleging the bank is only going after it because they find it distasteful. Well, I think it's a bit more complicated than that because it turns out that this investment advisor, was siphoning money to her over quite a while. Obviously, if it's $2.55 million, he didn't do it all at once, but he was doing it in small bits and pieces, including giving her $10,000 for clothes to accompany him to Dubai, I think it was. And I think that there's a little bit more here than just the fact that ASB finds her profession distasteful, which I'm sure they do. They're bankers. They don't like anything that's just not, you know, the pinstripe suit sort of thing. But it seems to me, and I could be completely wrong about this, but it seems to me that there must have been something going on more there than just a gentleman's arrangement with a lady of the evening, if you know what I mean. So I don't know. It's a bit dodgy, that one is. But in other news, let's talk about Kiwi Bank. Kiwi Bank is run by New Zealand Post, which is, of course, the post office. And they are in trouble, as all post offices around in the developed world are, because the volume of mail that they're delivering is declining. And as more people resort to either email or social online networks or what have you, they're not sending letters anymore, and they're getting their bills sent by email, so they're not getting as much in the post anymore, and there's less and less need for deliveries. Now, it hasn't reached a crisis point yet because the letter-carrying side of the business is still profitable, but the chairman, Jim Bolger, who is a former prime minister, actually, said that, and a former ambassador to the U.S., for that matter, as well, he apparently has said that the day when it turns around is coming soon, and when the change happens, it will be fast. Now, how precisely he knows that, I don't know. They must have consultants who tell them these things. But what he's suggesting is that is ways of saving money. They could dramatically increase costs. He has suggested a two-tier delivery system where premium service would get delivered quickly and others would not. And they actually kind of have that in a way already because we have this thing we call Fast Post. It costs twice as much as a normal first-class letter, but it's delivered in 1 to 2 days depending on where it's going in the country, whereas a normal letter may take 1 to 2 days. Oh, hang on. The point is that Fast Post isn't used as much as it could be because there's not necessarily much differentiation in delivery speed. Theoretically, they get priority. So if you really want to get something to a certain place on time, it's best to send it by Fast Post. But that could be what he's talking about revamping, making it so the Fast Post is, you know, the fast service and the ordinary they deliver when they get around to it or something. I don't know. But among the other things he's proposing, possibly doing, is eliminating Saturday deliveries. And that will sound familiar to Americans because the U.S. Postal Service has been proposing that again and again and again. And they're also proposing possibly delivering every other day, which is kind of astounding in itself. But I was thinking about this and about how electronic communications of various sorts are sort of taking over the world. And I thought about the people who are probably not as into that. They would be poor, who probably don't have a computer at home, and perhaps the elderly who are frightened by technology, as is often the case. So there would be a significant group of people who would be left out if there was a significant change in the delivery schedules for the Postal Service. But I don't know. I can see how it would be a very difficult thing for them to work out, how they're going to manage to keep the books balanced and still do what it is they do, you know, their business. And it's not to say that somebody, another company could come in and do it cheaper or you know, fill the slack that is no longer profitable for a big company, because it's quite frankly isn't profitable for any company to send delivery people up and down every street in the country when there's nothing to deliver, as is, well, it's not the case yet, but they project it will be eventually, that some days there'd be nothing to deliver. But he had a quote that I said that I thought was very interesting. Well, first of all, he said, let's not pretend that this is going to be an easy issue to resolve, which is certainly true. But this is what he said that I thought was a really interesting quote. He said, we're carrying hard copy letters on the wrong side of communication history. And I thought, whoa, that's actually really profound. Because, and he's right, because ultimately paper communication of that sort will probably go away. And it's probably sooner rather than later. I think that the traditional letters and even greeting cards will probably disappear before books and magazines will and newspapers. But eventually, all of that sort of stuff is going to disappear. It will become electronic. It's just a question of when, how it happens, what the replacements will be, those kinds of things. And those are all things we can't possibly know right now. But I just thought it was such a cool quote. I had to share it. I know you probably don't really care that much about the delivery of the mail in New Zealand, but I did think that that quote was really good. I have a few other things to tell you about today. First of all, there was something in the P.O. box. And no, I'm not going to thank Mrs. Lazarus Goodby or whatever the hell her name is. It was from Nancy in Japan, and she sent some nibbles for Jake and Bella. Thank you very much, Nancy. It's much appreciated. And I haven't been able to make it to the post office in, well, probably about a week, because I've been so busy. And so I didn't even look to see when it was postmarked, but I imagine it must have gotten there pretty quickly. But again, thank you, Nancy. It's very nice of you to do that. And Jake and Bellis and tail wags or whatever. They don't do the same things, do they? I mean, one wags and anyway. But I'm not going to do a Bella update at this point. However, I am going to play a voicemail message that kind of relates to that.
Hey, Arthur, this is Ramble. Just wanted to give you a quick call to say I listened to your latest episode, and I just want to say that I thought it was very good, a lot of interesting stuff. And I just want to say that regarding your cat, it kind of reminded me of the repeat, the cat that Joe and I have. She was a little wild and crazy at first, but then after a while, she finally settled down with Starbuck and Bristow and stuff like that. And just to let you know, what we do is we feed them. Joe gets up in the morning and feeds them, and then normally when I get home at night, we try to feed them at 5:30 and 6 o'clock. And the funny thing is that it's just amazing how they know exactly when it is time for their food, because they're like a bad alarm clock. And it's just so annoying. But even when we're getting ready to feed them, they're still like, meow, and it's just so crazy. And then Starbuck's like, whenever I want. You know, and then it wasn't until Repeat started to eat his food that Starbuck began to like, hey, back off, bitch. But anyway, I just want to say thank you for all your hard work regarding Pride 48, and I'm glad that you're not getting too stressed out. But I just want to say thank you on behalf of all of us who are going to be involved, that we appreciate all your hard work, as well as Daniel's, and anyone else who might be involved. So I just want to say thank you for all your hard work. So you take care, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Well, thanks for that, Tom. And yes, Bella is settling in, and yes, they're sort of getting their food issues solved. I have to admit that I did feel Bella's tummy the other day, yesterday I guess it was, and I thought, I think she is putting on a bit of weight. I go back and forth about this. It is my dilemma. but I've cut back her food just a little bit to see if that kind of evens things out. I know it's winter, and she's really fluffy because of that, but I don't want her to get fat. And Jake doesn't have the opportunity to get fat because I can't let... well, she's been eating his food, as I said, but I've now come up with a system where I put something on his food to make him want it. It might be some bacon fat, or it might be... We have these liver sprinkles from actually when he was a puppy, and he quite likes those. So I try to get him all excited about eating and then make him eat when I put the food down rather than leaving it all day like he used to. And so far, that seems to be working out okay. He seems to be getting all of his meals in. He's not losing weight or anything. So I guess that is a so far so good kind of situation. But it's certainly a work in progress. But since I started on comments, I might as well go over to written comments over at aaronspodcast.com. And the comment for the previous episode, 218 Lunchtime, was from Roger Green, who said, and he's quoting me, how the criteria were measured. And he says, "You have no idea how thrilled I was that you recognize criteria is a plural noun, just like data." Thank you, Roger. I'm a bit of a pedant in that way. And I am keenly aware that criteria is plural. Criterion is the singular form. Just like memorandum is singular, memoranda is plural. There's no such thing as memos. That's an Americanism. And there are plenty of other words like that, usually of Latin origin, I believe, or Latin by way of some other language. But they're very often misused, and I wonder if Roger noticed that on my blog recently I referred to indices instead of indexes. But anyway, I'm a pedant. I can't help it. But when I was on Twitter the other day, I saw a tweet from Stephen Fry, who I follow, and who, by the way, is the only celebrity who follows me back. And he was just kind of spitting over something that was on the Times Online. It says, "Pendant's revolt aims to protect English from spelling of text speak," text speech. And it's talking about setting up the Queen's English Society, made up of professionals, academics, and self-confessed pedants, has decided that an English academy is long overdue. Its members hope to win official recognition, or even a royal charter for their academy. And what they point out is that other languages, like most famously French, but also Spanish, have academies to try to regulate their language. And if you read through this article, most of the people, let's face it, are more on the sunset side of life. And some of the things they say are just absolutely absurd. This guy called Martin Estinel, who's 71, a retired translator and interpreter, said, "At the moment, anything goes. Let's set down a clear standard of what is good, correct, proper English. Let's have a body to sit in judgment." And, you know, English is one of the world's most vibrant languages. And one of the main reasons is because it so freely adopts words from other languages. The English that native speakers speak, whether it's in the U.S. or Canada or Australia or New Zealand or even jolly old England, has evolved over time, absorbing words from other cultures that it's come into contact with. Some Native American words like moccasin. There are words from African languages, and I can't think of any off the top of my head, but there are some. There's some from Spanish and German and French and Russian even, and all kinds of different languages have all added to English and made it a very rich language. It's one of the reasons why English is such an international language and why it is taught so much in other countries. And to suggest that it has to be regulated in some way is to suggest that it should no longer grow and evolve. And that is just patently absurd, which is, I think, what Stephen Fry was getting at. But he goes on to say that he still uses the word gay to mean happy, but grudgingly accepted that its newer definition was now in the dictionary. This is a quote. "Some other words are fads that die out," he said. "People misplace stress within a sentence. All these things are going haywire in the language." And to which my response is, "So? Who cares? It doesn't affect Mr. Estinel whether somebody puts the wrong stress in a sentence. His life isn't going to end because somebody has the wrong stress. he is not going to die because people use the word last when they mean past. And dropping of the conditional if I was you instead of if I were you. And, you know, it's just, he needs to relax. English will keep going on as long as it keeps evolving, and that is one of the keys. Time was that French was the diplomatic language. It was the second language on all the passports in the world. That's not true anymore. French is not declining necessarily, but it's not as important as it used to be. And one of the main reasons is because it is policed so heavily. So I think that Stephen Fry was absolutely right, and these people are just nuts, and we should ignore them. That's what I think. Oh, I just made a little speech, didn't I? Ooh, I did. And finally, I finally done my first Audioboo. And Audioboo is a service on the web. You go to audioboo.fm, and there are many people there who record short messages, usually, well, it's under 5 minutes, that's the maximum, talking about whatever it is they want to talk about. Now, I don't know if you could always upload files or record on the web, or if it was only for iPhone or what's the Android, I think it's the other phone that's compatible. But it certainly was originally most popular with iPhone users who would record and send in a brief message about where they were, what they were doing, and so on. It's evolved a bit since then, and at the moment I have to record mine at my computer because I don't have a compatible phone, which is fine. You know, there's no law or rule that says I have to. But one of the things that we're doing with this is we're asking anybody who does an Audioboo to tag it Pride48, and then people can subscribe to that, and then we can all listen to it. It's kind of like a network, in a manner of speaking, I suppose. So I did my first Audioboo, and I'm going to play that for you now. Hi, this is Arthur with my first Audioboo. My nickname, Amrins, is derived from American in New Zealand, because that's what I am. And this boo is called Tahi, because that's Māori for number one. I moved to New Zealand in 1995 to be with my partner because at the time, the laws were that he could sponsor me for immigration to New Zealand, but I couldn't sponsor him for immigration to the United States. Actually, nothing's changed in 15 years. If anything, it's gotten worse for the U.S. But you can read about that on my blog, or you can listen to it on my podcast, which you can get to at amrins.com. But these boos, I think, will be a little bit different from both. And there you have my first audio boo. And I'd like a second opinion. Did it sound like I was reading that? Because I absolutely was not. I had decided what I wanted to say, and I'd recorded it a few times, we'll say, so maybe I had it down pat. But it sounds to me like I'm reading, and I would like to know from somebody else so that I'll know if I need to moderate my voice differently or something. I don't know. Anyway, so these boos? are going to be different from what is in the podcast, sometimes in addition to, sometimes different from. But you can subscribe to them separately by going to the site, and I'll put a link in the show notes, and subscribing to my audio boos. And they'll show up in your iTunes just like the podcast does. Although, of course, obviously that's optional. I don't know if they're going to be that interesting or not, but we'll see. Once I get a compatible phone, I may do some recording on the road. But for the time being, I can only record at the desktop, which means there'll be short little observations, comments, maybe things I've forgotten forgotten to mention in the podcast, those kinds of things. I don't know. I'm working on two interviews for upcoming episodes. Have a episode with Jason, and I may be back later this week. I don't know. We'll see. It'll be a surprise to everyone. Have a great rest of the week. Bye. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrins Podcast at amrinspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrinspodcast.com. Or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website. Hi, my name is Arthur.
And my name's Jason.
And we're the hosts of Too Political, a podcast in which two old friends talk about politics, the news, and whatever else we think of. You know, we've been friends for a long time.
Yes, a very long time.
We've always talked about news and current events.
We've been going on like this for years. Now you can listen in.
You can find us on iTunes or go to our website, twopolitical.com. That's the number twopolitical.com. What's that name again?
Too Political. Too Political.